Hey guys, this episode of Sports Spectrum is brought to you by our friends at Water Mission, a Christian engineering nonprofit committed to providing clean and safe water and, most importantly, God's love to people around the world. You can get involved today and learn more by going to watermission.org/join the team. Watermission.org/join the team. I'm telling you, you won't regret getting involved with this amazing ministry. Clean water to people in need. Watermission.org/join the team.
Welcome to the Sports Spectrum Podcast, the intersection of sports and faith. Here's your host, Jason Romano.
And welcome, everyone, to Sports Spectrum, the intersection of sports and faith. I am Jason Romano. So glad that you are tuned in to our program today on this Football Friday. Football is just around the corner here late summer, and just excited about another season on our way. And today we get to talk to a 2002 NFL MVP, the best player in football in 2002. Rich Gannon is our guest here on Sports Spectrum. He's going to join us in just a second. First, a couple ways you can get in touch with us. You can go to our website, first of all. That's the best place to go each and every day for content updated daily on sportsspectrum.com, the intersection of sports and faith, devotionals, podcasts, articles, testimonials, videos, you name it. You can find them. It's all free, and it's all available at sportsspectrum.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, maybe you have some feedback or you have a guest idea that we should be considering here at Sports Spectrum, you can email me, jason@sportsspectrum.com, jason@sportsspectrum.com. Now, today on the show, Rich Gannon really doesn't need a long introduction. He's the 2002 NFL MVP. He had a season of throwing 4,700 yards, 26 touchdowns, a 68% completion percentage, and led his team to the Super Bowl 37 in that 2002 NFL season. Rich initially was drafted by New England, traded to Minnesota, spent 5 years there, then went to Washington, Kansas City, and really started to take shape as an elite NFL quarterback when he arrived in Oakland, the then Oakland Raiders, in 1999. And in 2000, 2001, 2002, was one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. He was a two-time AP First Team All-Pro, three-time AFC Offensive Player of the Year, and as I mentioned, the 2002 NFL MVP. Rich is currently doing broadcast work with CBS Sports Network, and you can hear him on Sirius XM's NFL Radio, one of my favorite channels, on Sirius XM and Rich Gannon talking football there. And today we're going to talk football as well, but we really have a different conversation, which is what we try to do here at Sports Spectrum, than Rich might normally have, because we're going to intersect the conversation with Rich's strong faith in Jesus Christ. Let's take a listen to Rich Gannon, 2002 NFL MVP, longtime NFL quarterback, joining us today on Sports Spectrum. Hey, Rich Gannon, welcome to Sports Spectrum. How are you, sir?
Jason, I'm doing great, and thanks so much for having me. We have the same equipment. We have the same home studio, and it is so good to be with you today.
Yeah, we do have the same equipment. I don't have the same accolades as you. I'm not a former NFL MVP who played in the Super Bowl, but I thought about this when we were, you know, going to have this conversation. I thought, you know, it's been 20 years. This is the 20-year anniversary this season of that Raiders team, the last Raiders team that made it to the Super Bowl. Is it crazy when you think about the fact that 20 years has flown by like that?
It goes fast, you know, and you always think that when you get to a game like that, if it doesn't turn out quite the way you expect, that you always get a chance to go back. And unfortunately, for us and for the Raiders, it really hasn't happened. And then, you know, I talk a lot about the importance of continuity and consistency and leadership at every level of your organization. And unfortunately, when I left the Raiders in 2004, it just had so much turnover. You know, they had an aging owner. They went through, I think, seven coaches in 10 years. They had a number of different quarterbacks. They really had a streak of losing seasons. And, you know, you ask yourself, why does a team like that struggle when you look at a team like New England or Pittsburgh or Green Bay? And I think it really gets down to some of the core concepts and principles that I talk about. And I think one of them is having that continuity, that consistency, that leadership, and great communication at every level of your organization.
Yeah. And it's funny when you think back to that season, even that time of your career, it was so unique, I think, at least from an outsider. You know, I just started working at ESPN in 2000. So I kind of saw the 2000, 2001, 2002 Rich Gannon, right? Which was, I would say, if I'm looking at your career, that's probably your three best seasons. But you also kind of hit your peak at those years at 34, 35, and 36. It wasn't some of these guys right now, like the Josh Allens or the Pat Mahomes, who are 24, 25, 26, right? So it was fascinating to me to think you were, maybe this is a better question, were you a much better quarterback at 36, or was it just the opportunity? Was it the system, or was it kind of a combination of all for you?
Jason, I think there's a combination of factors. I would say that almost all quarterbacks that come into our league are simply not ready to play. I think you look at this current class that's come in. I mean, even Kenny Pickett is probably the most ready to play, probably won't start for the Pittsburgh Steelers in week one. And you go back to the 87 draft, I was a fourth round pick of the Patriots, was traded to the Vikings. I wasn't ready to play. I played in the wing T offense at Delaware. I had to learn about the NFL passing game. I learned about protections and concepts and defenses and coverages and fronts and pressures. And so it took me a while to kind of, get a lay of the land. And I had a chance and an opportunity to play behind two veteran quarterbacks. Both were Pro Bowl quarterbacks at one point in their career. And so it provided me that opportunity to watch, to listen, and to learn. And then when I finally got my chance to play in Minnesota, I was with two different head coaches, and then I got traded to Washington. Then I had rotator cuff surgery. I was out of football a year. And then I went to Kansas City and had four really good years, but not as the primary starter, but we won a lot of football games. And in that last season in Kansas City in 98, I got a chance to play quite a bit, and then was ultimately signed as a free agent with the Raiders. And it was later in my career where I really got the opportunity. It was the first time in my career anyway, that the opportunity was presented to me to have my own team, right? To have an owner, a general manager, and a head coach that truly believed in me. I don't know that I had that in those prior years. And that was frustrating because I knew I could do it. I knew I was a good player, but I just needed the opportunity. And I finally got that opportunity in Oakland in 1999.
Were there times during, you mentioned the surgery that you had, I think it was, you missed the 94 season. Were there times during that time, because you're 27, 28, 29, you're entering into what's supposed to be the prime of your career, and you're still not kind of hope there where you would like to be. Were there times where you thought, maybe this isn't for me, or were you always one of those guys that just kind of persevered and said, you know what, this is going to come. I just need to stay the course here.
There was never a time that I didn't think it was for me. There was some times that I had doubt, questions, concerns. You know, after I had the shoulder surgery, after the 93 season, you know, I didn't play in 94. My wife and I had our first child, and there was talk about me possibly going to Canada to play. And so there was a lot of stress. And it was during that time, and really during my entire career, that I prayed. I just asked God for guidance and strength. And I was blessed to have had the opportunity when I came to the Vikings in 1987 to really hook up with our team chaplain, Tom Lamphere, who, believe it or not, Jason, is still the team chaplain of the Minnesota Vikings. Absolutely. In 2022. Yeah. Think about that. He came in 87, you know, Tom, and he and Jeannie were just so good for me. And they really took me under the wing and really helped me to grow in my faith. And I think it was during that time that I was out of football, where I spent a lot of time with Tom. We'd have breakfast, we'd pray together, we'd read the Bible together, we'd talk, and he just really encouraged me to stay in the Word and to trust God and to trust, you know, the journey that I was on. And as it turned out, it was through that adversity, it was through those trials and tribulations that I grew stronger in my faith, but I also got the opportunity once again to get back into the NFL with the Kansas City Chiefs in 1995. And I really had a renewed sense of enthusiasm, a better appreciation for the graces, and also for the opportunity that I had. You know, I think when I came into the league in 87 and I made the football team and I had a little bit of success, I'm not saying I became complacent, but I got comfortable. When I was out of football, it really opened my eyes. And when I got back in, I never forgot just how fortunate, how blessed I was to have that opportunity a second time around.
Take me back to that rookie year and you meet Tom Lamphere. Where are you in your faith and what happens? You talked about the impact that he had throughout your career, especially in those difficult times. But what takes place? It sounds like there's a you know, the Bible uses, I think, a transformation is the word that the Bible uses. Tell me what happened with you that rookie year and kind of how you grew through that with your faith.
Well, you're right. There was a transformation. I was blessed. I grew up in a wonderful home, a faith-filled home. I got parents who loved and cared for me enough to send me to really good schools, to take me to church on Sunday. I grew up in the Catholic faith. I went to Catholic school for 12 years, went to a private Jesuit boys high school in the city of Philadelphia, St. Joe's Prep. We talk about the soul of education is the education of the soul. And I, you know, we learned about being a man for others and service. And so I was fortunate to have a really good foundation. And through college, Jason, I went to church every Sunday. I mean, I was consistent in on Sundays, but not so much Monday through Saturdays. My prayer life wasn't great. I was very inconsistent with that in terms of the Bible. It was on a shelf, but rarely opened. And I felt like I was living a faith-filled life, a Christian life, and I really wasn't. And I didn't have Jesus at the heart and center of it. And so when I sat down, so my rookie year in 87 was a tough one. You know, I moved out of the Philadelphia area. I had an apartment in Minnesota during the holidays and Thanksgiving, Christmases by myself. And I was just really kind of lonely. And I just remember, you know, going to chapels and going to Bible studies. And, you know, obviously I met Tom. And then at one point I just became very curious. And I just said, hey, I just want to sit down and visit with you. And we talked and he said, you know, have you ever accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior? And I thought about it and I thought, you know, I never made those decisions, Jason. When I was born, I didn't ask to be baptized. I didn't ask to go to Catholic school and receive First Holy Communion or confirmation. I didn't ask to do those things. I just did them because that's how I was brought up and that's how I was trained. And I had a respect for my parents and I went to church every Sunday and it became very much a habit. Something I looked forward to, something, you know, I really got a lot out of, but I didn't really know the person Jesus. And in 87, Tom asked me, he said, do you want to make this commitment? And I said, yes. And I did. And really from then on, I think my eyes were really opened to maybe some of the deficiencies in my own walk, maybe areas where I could be better. And most importantly, areas where I could be more consistent. I always said, if I was as consistent in my faith life and my walk with Jesus as I was studying the game plan in the playbook, I'd be an all pro Christian. You know what I mean? And so that's really where in 87, I began to really, I think, hunker down and try and really work and put my faith at the center of my life.
Hey guys, taking a quick break from our conversation here on Sports Spectrum to tell you again about our friends at Water Mission, our partners here at Sports Spectrum. They are amazing partners. What Water Mission does, a Christian engineering nonprofit committed to providing clean, safe water and God's love to people all around the world. Now you can get involved today and learn more by going to watermission.org/join the team. watermission.org/join the team. I'm telling you, if you're looking for a place to sow, to give, to pour into, and know that your money is going to make a difference, Water Mission is the place to go. Again, the website, watermission.org/join the team. Rich Gannon is joining us here on Sports Spectrum, 2002 NFL MVP, two-time Pro Bowl MVP. I had to do some research on that. And you just posted a picture, which I thought was very funny on Twitter a couple days ago. And it was you and a very young Tom Brady in the Pro Bowl. And I thought, that's kind of crazy when you think back. That's 20 years ago. And this guy at 45 is still playing.
He's still playing.
He's still playing.
Isn't it amazing?
And still dominating, not just playing, right?
Yeah, he's a unique player. And you would ask me back then, you know, if I would have felt like this guy would come back and play in multiple Pro Bowls and win multiple Super Bowls, I would have said, you're crazy. I mean, there's nothing that was overpowering about his physique or his arm talent or his athleticism. But, you know, sometimes you can't measure what's in a person's heart. And this guy is, he's a, he's a real grinder. He's a hard worker. He's dedicated to his profession. He takes a great deal of pride in his preparation, performance, and it's important to him. He's a great leader. He's a great teammate. He's a great competitor, and it's been fun to really watch how he has really dominated the landscape of the NFL these past two decades.
Yeah, it's funny to think the game that put him on the map is a game against you, and I'm not trying to recall bad memories here, Rich. Obviously, the snow game and the tuck rule game. Clearly, he fumbled. I will go to my grave. I'm sure you will too, saying that he fumbled the football. And I love the little show that ESPN did with him and Charles Woodson, which was a lot of fun. And they can kind of look back at it now and laugh. But can you look back at a game like that and just appreciate sort of the fact that you were in one of the most historical football games of all time, even though it didn't end up the way you would have liked it to end up?
Yeah, it was a big game. I mean, you played a lot of them, but that was a transformational game. It really, I think, catapulted the Patriots onto the path of winning multiple Super Bowls and really dominating the AFC East and certainly the AFC and the NFL for the better part of two decades. Unfortunately for us, we jumped on a plane and headed back to Oakland, and a couple weeks later lost our coach. You know, John Gruden was traded to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who we lost to in the Super Bowl the following year. So it was really a devastating loss. And the interesting thing is, I don't know if I'm the only person that had this perspective, but I had this perspective almost immediately after the game was over. So many of my teammates, and this is a flaw in my opinion, and even our coaches, so many of the people within the organization, including the owner, wanted to place the blame on the officials. You know, it was a terrible call. It was the wrong call. No one had ever heard of the tuck rule. And I chose to look back on the game, as I always did, and say, what could I have done differently to impact the outcome of that game? What could we have done differently on offense to impact that game? The game never should have gotten to that point. The game was over. We had an opportunity in the fourth quarter. We had to drive the end of the game, and we had two plays in a sequence of about three or four plays that were blocked wrong. And on the last play, we had a short yardage play. We needed to pick up about a foot, and we barely got back to the line of scrimmage, and it resulted in us punting the football back to Brady. They go down, of course, kick the field goal, sends the game into overtime. Once the game goes into overtime, we never get a possession. You know, they win the toss, they get the ball, they drive down the field, kick another field goal. So, but I look back and say, you know, if we just do the things we're coached to do, if we make the right decisions, you know, and the ability to process and absorb information in a critical time is really important to what we do as NFL players. And, you know, I just had a couple mental errors. We talk about two things you can't have on offense, Jason, in the NFL: MEs and MAs, mental errors and missed assignments. And we had too many of them that game. And I look back at that point, at that side of it, and say, you know, that's why we lost, not because Brady didn't see Charles Woodson blitzing off the edge. Brady was tucking the ball down and, you know, wasn't planning on throwing it. The ball got stripped, and it, you know, looked like a fumble, and, you know, and the officials, you know, called it the wrong way. I mean, you can have the argument, it makes for great television. It makes for a great 30 for 30 on ESPN. But at the end, you win and lose games by making good decisions and being on top of your game. We just weren't in those situations.
Yeah. And they have to make plays too. They have to make, right, you know, throws, and they have to kick 45 yard field goals in blizzards and do what they had to do to win as well. Is that the craziest weather game you've ever played in? I mean, you were in Delaware, you played in, you know, Washington and Kansas City, places where you might get some weather. I have to imagine that's the craziest weather game you've ever played in though. That was 3 or 4 inches of snow the whole time while you were trying to play a playoff game.
It was one of them. It was really surreal because it was, you know, obviously a night game. And it seemed like the day took forever. You know, we just sat in the hotel room, you know, outside of Boston, and we just looking out the window, and you could just see it start to snow in the afternoon, and it just kept coming down and coming down. And by the time we got to the stadium, there was a great deal of snow in the field, and they were clearing the field. And so it certainly affected your footing. But when you get situations like that, it's really an advantage to the offense. The offensive players know where they're going. The receivers know how deep they're getting in the routes. It affects the pass rush. The pass rush isn't nearly as effective because of the footing. So it does slow down the game a little bit from that perspective. So, you know, if you look at Brady and the Patriots, they threw a ball a bunch in the second half, and particularly in overtime. I mean, Brady just kept throwing the football, dinking and dunking. And that was a really smart way of attacking. So It wasn't cold. It was a little bit of wind. Certainly it affected the footing. It affected the ball a little bit, throwing it. But, you know, I thought it was an advantage for Tom and I. But there was one other game I played on a Thursday night in Kansas City against Seattle in a torrential downpour. They stopped the game a couple times. We went into the locker room. There was a foot of water in the locker room. It was, I think we played against the Seahawks and Warren Moon. And I think Warren Moon came into the game averaging about 40 attempts a game. I think he threw the ball four times in that game. You just simply couldn't throw the football. But, you know, I played in some bad weather games, but certainly the Tuckwell game was one of them.
That time of your career, though, as we talked about at the top, was a great time for you as far as what you're accomplishing, right? So I'm curious, because you mentioned prayer, reading God's word, those difficult seasons of life, right? That's where we turn to God, and I think it becomes easier to turn to God when things aren't going. What were those years like when you were having so much success, winning MVPs, going to the Super Bowl, playing in playoff games, as far as your faith goes? Were you able to kind of appreciate it? Because I've heard people who have a lot of success, when they look back, say, you know what? I got caught up in the success, the pats on the back, all of the accomplishments. What was that like for you during those years?
It was pretty good. You know, I would say it was a really a great period of growth and development. I think about the four pillars anyway in my life when it comes to my relationship with Jesus. And I think it's obviously spending time in the Word. I think fellowship is really important, whether it's Bible study, whether it's mass, you know, being around other men and women of faith to encourage me, to be able to share my faith, be able to share the good news, as we're all called to do as disciples of Christ. And then, you know, I think obviously, the spending time, in prayer, you know, and that really, and having that conversation with Jesus, and talking about not just always coming to Jesus for what you need, you know what I mean? But sometimes just coming and listening, you know, I think that's really important as well. So we talk about obviously prayer. We talk about, fellowship. We talk about, the Bible, obviously spending time in the Word. I was really blessed during those times to have good chaplains in Minnesota, in Kansas City. Washington was an amazing locker room, Jason. It was just filled with strong Christian men. You know, I just missed Joe Gibbs by a year, but I remember going to chapels on Saturday nights before the games, and you look around the room and it seemed like half the team was there and maybe 75% of the coaching staff, and they were taking notes. It was a great, and unfortunately I just spent 1 year there, then going to Oakland, and we had a great, we had some really good, strong Christian leaders on that team. But the group in Kansas City, bar none, was incredible. I mean, we had a faith filled group, man. We had some great guys like Dave Zott and Tim Grunhard and John Alton. We just had a lot of really good guys, Tony Richardson, just great men of faith, you know? So there was, I just felt like I was surrounded by brothers, you know what I mean? Not only, on the gridiron, but in my walk. And that was a blessing. And of course, my wife, Shelley, you know, has been just outstanding, who's walked side by side with me during those tough, tough times. The only thing I would say to you, Jason, is that, I was grounded in my faith. There's no question about it. But at times there's this magnitude of, you know, the profession and playing in big games and playing and, you know, competing for championships and being the MVP of the league. And sometimes that can be an enormous, I don't want to say responsibility, but it can pull you. It can drag you away from your faith and your focus. And at times I'm sure it did, you know, and I talked about the consistency. And I talk a lot about, you know, I want to be consistent in everything I do. And there was times, quite frankly, where I wasn't as consistent in my walk. I was faithful in terms of church and, going to Bible study and going to chapels and doing those things, but in my daily walk and spending time, quality time in the Word, my prayer life, there was times that I wasn't consistent. So it was a journey, and it continues to be a journey, you know. And as I sit here in my home office, and you know, I say, like, you know, have I been consistent this week? Have I been consistent this month? And that's always, unfortunately, going to be a challenge for me and probably for a lot of us.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, and I will go there in a second in terms of where you are today. When you retired, I mean, it was quick, right? It was MVP in 2002, 3 years later, out of the league and done playing. What was the transition like for you post-playing career to being a former player as opposed to a current player? Because a lot of guys struggle with that. I know you went into broadcasting pretty quickly, which I think had to help, but still there's this finality of football being over and suddenly you're not doing something that you've done for the last, whatever it was, 25 years.
It's a very difficult transition. Unfortunately, for a lot of NFL players, it's not a smooth transition, and it really results in a lot of struggles for the core of the family. You know, I think the divorce rate for NFL players post career is probably like 75%. It's very high. And there's a reason for that. Players don't transition well. Players don't plan well. You're no longer making the big money. Money becomes an issue in the relationship. You start arguing over money and bills and the lifestyle. And then eventually, someone leaves the marriage. And so, I was blessed. I always talk about the two most important decisions you'll make in life: accepting Jesus as your Lord and Savior, and you know your spouse, your significant other. And so, I was blessed to have a great wife in Shelley, and we just celebrated our 29th wedding anniversary this past weekend. And she's helped to ground me and to keep me focused. So that's helped. We live a pretty conservative lifestyle. And then when I retired, and I retired when I was 39 years old, and Jason, I would have kept playing. I was in really good physical shape. I was playing well, but I broke my neck. I had a significant neck injury that really ended my career in the 2004 season. And so when I got done playing, I had no ambitions, desires to get into broadcasting, but CBS contacted my agent at the time and said, "Hey, you know, we'd like to bring him into New York for an audition." And so I flew into New York and did the audition and actually enjoyed the process and started calling games that year in 2005 and was blessed to call games at CBS for the better part of 16 seasons and still work with CBS Sports Network and still involved in the game. But it helped make that transition a whole lot easier because I got to stay involved with the game I love. And I tell people all the time, you know, I've been like for 35 years or 36 years, whatever it's been since I left college, I haven't worked a day in my life. I mean, if you love what you do, playing football and being around football and calling NFL games, it's really not work. So I've really enjoyed the process and it's been a blessing. You know, I look at that as another blessing, as the Lord takes me from the gridiron to the broadcast booth. And it's been an amazing experience and a real blessing to continue to be a part of a game I love so much.
Yeah, you can listen to Rich on Sirius XM throughout the NFL season and see him on CBS Sports Network. Lots of good stuff still going on. I love that you're still involved from the broadcasting side and still get to, you know, lend your expertise on that end. From a faith perspective, as we wind down here, a question that I like to ask everybody on this show, especially at the end, and I'm curious what your answer might be because of where God has you today. What's he teaching you now? What's he showing you today when you think about this life that you've lived, you know, 56 years old and God has blessed you in so many cool ways? What's the lesson that he's teaching you today, though, as you think about where you are in life?
You know, Jason, that's not a good question. That's a great question.
Thank you.
And it really causes me to think and take a step back. I think he's really encouraging me to be more compassionate, more empathetic. I think more understanding of other people's situations. You know, I often say I have real sadness for people who don't have a relationship with Christ. I mean, I can't imagine what my life would look like, be like, feel like if I didn't have that foundation. I didn't have that relationship. And I see a lot of people. I know a lot of people. I have friends, you know. I play golf with guys. I interact with people at work that I know simply don't have that relationship. And it saddens me. And I pray for them. I try to be an example to them. I try and be a witness to them. But it does open my eyes, and also I have a Bible study group here. We go to Mass every Wednesday morning, and then we take turns buying books and reading books and, you know, reading scripture. And so everyone takes turns kind of preparing a lesson. And so, you know, one of the things we've been talking about is what am I doing? We're all called to be disciples, right? We're all called to be fishers of men. Like, am I really taking that vocation seriously? I mean, when Jesus approached, you know, Andrew and James and some of the other disciples, he asked them to drop their nets and to come follow me. And I'm always taken back by their response. It wasn't, well, let me think about it and I'll get back to you tomorrow. It wasn't, let me sell some of my equipment, my boat and my nets. You know what I mean? Let me go home and talk to my family about it. And when do you need to know by? It was the immediate response and the obedience. And that's an area of my life where I have to be better. I can be better, but the obedience part of it, not when I'm ready, not when I feel like it, not when I'm up to it. You know what I mean? But when God calls and it's an immediate response, here I am, Lord. And so that's where I think I'm working. You know what I mean? I'm always going to be working on the consistency in my prayer life, in studying the word, and being a more faith-filled Christian. But also, I think in my journey to be one of God's disciples, to be a, I don't want to say a better ambassador, but to be a better servant. And I always talk about this. I'm asked a lot about leadership in the NFL. They say, who are the great leaders? I said, the best leaders in the world have been servant leaders. And the greatest example of that, that mankind has ever known, has ever experienced, is Jesus Christ. No one, he came to serve, not to be served.
That's right.
What an example to all of us.
Yeah. That's beautifully said, Rich Gannon. Hey, thanks for joining us. Thanks for being here on Sports Spectrum. We really do appreciate you, appreciate your time, and hopefully you'll come back again and join us another time here on the show. Thanks for being here, buddy.
Jason, I can't thank you enough for inviting me. I hope you'll have me back soon.
And super thankful again to Rich Gannon for being our guest today right here on Sports Spectrum. Very open about his faith, and you can tell that the importance of a relationship with Jesus Christ is top priority for Rich Gannon. And I love that he was so open about sharing that and how much he wants to grow in his obedience and in his serving others to tell them about the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ. So thank you to the 2002 NFL MVP, Rich Gannon, for being here today on Sports Spectrum. That's got to be like the coolest title too, right? When you win an NFL MVP, you're that forever. So whenever people are referring to Rich Gannon, obviously man of faith, husband, dad, but 2002 NFL MVP, that's pretty awesome. So we appreciate Rich for being here today on Sports Spectrum. I hope you were encouraged by what he had to say. Thanks for tuning in, and make sure you do check out our website, sportsspectrum.com, for all of our content. And then whatever app you're listening to this podcast on, make sure you click that subscribe button, or if you're on Apple Podcasts, click that follow button at the top of the Apple Podcasts app. It's a little square, a little plus sign there. Definitely check it out. Subscribe, follow. That way you never miss an episode of Sports Spectrum's podcast. We are the intersection of sports and faith. We hope you enjoy the conversations that we have, bringing Jesus into the sports conversation. And thank you for tuning in. We love you guys. Have a great rest of your day. And please do tune in next time for another episode of Sports Spectrum's podcast. We'll see you soon.